Guys, welcome back. You know how we do. This is The Pulse. And every week, I love doing this show because I get to talk to people who I've watched, who I've admired, who I've seen the different things they're doing, their performances. And today, comedian, actor. I was reading his bio. It said trailblazer of MTV in the 90s and inventor of booty call. Listen, that was my favorite part of the bio. The inventor of booty call, Bill Bellamy. How are you, sir?
Bill, I am really excited, man. I love Philly. You know, it is one of those cities that's always embraced me like a son or a cousin or a nephew, you know what I mean? So anytime that I can pull up in Philly, man, I'm all the way turned up.
So I got to tell you, one of our producers from outside of the country helps book the show, has an awesome perspective. And she was saying to me as she was doing research, I didn't realize he created the word booty call. And I said, see, you didn't come up in the States in the 90s. Because anybody who did, we all know. we're all familiar with the creation of the term. Right? How many people still calling you out for the creation of booty call?
Yeah, you know, it's so funny, you know, what jokes can do. Jokes are like songs, you know, and some songs are timeless. Like, this joke is timeless. Like, you know, Eddie Murphy's joke, Goonie Goo Goo. You know, it's just certain things in the pop culture that sticks. Booty call is just one of those things that was so funny to people. They just start saying this like a famous quote from a movie, you know what I mean? And who knew all the booty that would just be accomplished since the 90s?
And that's why the rest of us know. And thank you for the call. You made a practice common behavior an acceptable behavior.
And made it funny without it being nasty. You know what I mean? That's why, you know, in the early 90s, you had to be creative how you could say something that you could say on television. So that was my way of talking about getting that booty, but you got to make the booty call. Like, it literally, and bam, as soon as I said it, everybody starts saying it because it's true.
That's this generation's text message. Like, you up? Mm-hmm. That's where that is now.
See, they swipe it to the left, to the right. We was really calling.
So I was actually in doing a little bit of research about that. That almost didn't happen because that the whole joke and that whole thing that night when you were performing, they tried to pull you off stage.
Yeah, man, it was really interesting. That would have changed to. Wow, that one move would have kind of changed the trajectory of my career because the joke that I was going to do, which was booty call, was brand new. And that night they were trying to bump me off the show because Charlie Barnett was on stage and he was literally killing. And it was like, we're going to let him close the show because, you know, this guy, he just totally did such a great job. And I was backstage waiting to go on. I was like, dog, I don't care. Like, just let me do my thing, man. I got something. And he was like, nah, B, it don't make sense. And I was like, dog, look, I came all the way from Jersey, bro, on everything, bro. My car probably gone. I double parked. I got to do this joke. And he, you know, shout out to Andre Brown. You know, he let me go on stage anyway. And HBO was in the building. And the rest is history. That's exactly what happened.
So this was pre-everything. So this was pre-Def Jam. This was pre-MTV. This was
Def
comedy
Jam
circuit.
Yeah. I was just doing a comedy circuit. I was in Harlem at this place called Uptown. And it used to be the dopest place to go on a Sunday night because, you know, all the celebrities would be there. It's in Harlem. It felt like the culture at that time. You know what I'm saying? It was like, if you go to the Uptown and you kill, you are one of the funniest cats in New York at that time, you know?
So that night, Russell Simmons was in the building. So that actually kind of launched the Def Comedy Jam, at least for you.
Yeah. It launched a lot of people's careers because that was sort of like the scouting night of what this culture and hip hop was doing, what comedy was doing in New York. And Russell Simmons was pioneering this movement at this time. And I just happened to be in the right place at the right time, man. I mean, and show up and show out. And I got that shot, man. Next thing you know, I was on TV in less than, 7 months later, I was on television and cable. And next thing you know, I'm on MTV. My life just went bam, bam, bam.
And that's kind of when the whole trailblazer thing, because any of us who came up around that era. We remember MTV. We remember the shows. Like, MTV was a cultural phenomenon then.
Yeah, man. Like, it was the place to be, man. I just had this conversation on my podcast. Like, MTV was the place for cool, for pop culture, and what was next, right? And so it was a one-stop shop. You couldn't go nowhere else to get all that in one place. You know, you would find out the top 20 videos in the country, the top albums that drop, what's going on in culture, what's going on in hip-hop news. It was like a news station, a radio station, and a place to watch videos.
And did that prepare you? I mean, that was, you were doing comedy, but the MTV thing was comedy, interviews, a little bit of acting, because y'all did skits. Like, it seemed like that may have been kind of the foundation for, you know, the next 30 years now.
Yeah, man, it was definitely a springboard for me, because I got a chance to do all the things that my talent was capable of. You know, I can act, I can be funny, I can host a show. I was able to practice my interviews. I got a chance to interview everybody from Michael Jackson to Janet to Kurt Cobain to Tupac, Biggie, Jay-Z, Destiny's Child, like, you know, the Fugees, the first album, second album, you know, Domino. Like, it was so many cute, cool artists that that just came out of the 90s. When you go back, man, it's so nostalgic. And that's one of the things that I'm including in my book, Top Billing. It'll be out next year in first quarter. Mm-hmm. It's like, I just want to take people back a little bit, because I don't want that era to get lost. You know, I don't want to hear about the 90s 30 years from now. Right. Like, I want people to really understand how prolific the 90s pop culture explosion really was. I mean, like, we were wearing, remember, I don't know how old you were in 92, 93, but we were wearing bright, bright colors. Remember, we was wearing, like, cross colors.
Yeah, man.
Boo-boo.
Yeah.
We had TLC. We had Leaders of the New School. I mean, it was so much fun. Busta Rhymes, Missy Elliott. It was crazy.
Didn't Coca-Cola have, like, a brand? And we were rocking the Coca-Cola shirts.
Yeah. You know?
There was
exactly
everything.
It was,
man,
really a fun time, man. I mean, it's definitely worth going back and really being nostalgic.
Yeah, and that's going to make me pull out pictures and whatnot, wearing my X hat and the overalls with the one strap over the corner.
What? Why do we have the one strap on? I do not know. We were just trying to be cool.
I mean, I blame you. That you were setting trends at that point. So
I was setting trends. Yeah. I was wearing the oversized clothes. Right. I was wearing like 145 pounds, but I had 75 pounds of fabric on. It was crazy.
And we thought we were doing something. You mentioned Top Billing, and we were going to get to that, because it's not Top Billing. Your book, your story, not out yet, April of next year. But it digs into a lot of those cultural phenomenons and things that were happening. But it also, like, you were on track to go have that good corporate job before you just stepped away from it.
Yeah. I was really a very lucky kid in respect to being, my timing was always in a flow to a certain degree. I got out of college from Rutgers, and I just wanted to get a really good job. I got a great job, and I worked there for like 2 years. And during that course of that time, you know, I was really, really being progressive. I was probably one of very few African-American college grads at this position out of school. So I was really like one of maybe five guys that came in on a managerial level and was on a program to progress. Like, so they were really being diverse and trying to like get young, smart people to come into the company at the time. So I really didn't have a bad situation. It was just like, I wanted a greater life. I just didn't want to do the corporate thing. It just felt like there was so many ceilings in corporate America as far as creatively. And so I was nervous to make a step like this. I'll be honest with you. I was just very, very nervous to give up a bird in the hand for unlimited possibilities at that time. I was probably like 24 years old, nervous. Like, oh my God, like if I quit this job, I'm going to fail.
And then years later, you create Booty Call. So it all worked out.
Next thing you know, it's booty everywhere.
Right. All worked out for everybody. Did you mentioned some of the names, and it sounds like even then, like you were on course to be one of the few, you know, kind of African Americans opening those corporate doors. You then were opening doors at MTV and comedy. Did you realize the impact? You know, it's kind of that trailblazer status that I talked about when I said MTV. Did you realize that you were actually opening doors and not just making people laugh and be entertained?
Yes, I did know that, because there was nobody that would look like me on MTV. You know, as I was coming in, Ed Lover and Dr. Dre were leaving. So Yo MTV was coming to a close for whatever reason, didn't know why. And so then MTV Jams and Top 20 Countdown, like all this pop culture stuff just exploded. And, you know, our music was able to catch that wave. You know, they were starting to play TLC and Tevin Campbell and SWV and Shy. And then they were playing, you know, Nas. And, you know, like you have Nas and Boyz II Men. Like it was so eclectic. The kind of artists that we were doing, Diggable Planets, cats don't even know about this stuff. And we're going back to Tribe Called Quest, you know, that was that first album, you know? And I was there going, oh my God, man, this is so cool that these artists are blowing up. They're starting to go from gold artists to platinum artists overnight. It was a beautiful situation.
Man, I went to school in DC, and you guys made all of those folks accessible, because I remember Diggable Planets performed on the quad at George Washington University, just
no way
out there in the middle. And I feel like part of that, we just walking through campus, you know, and you come over to the quad, it was like a homecoming kind of thing, and they performed there. And you guys
absolutely
made that type of thing cool. They're performing at beach houses, they're performing and interacting with people. Like, they became accessible because of a lot of what you guys were doing.
Yeah, man. And it was purposeful. You know, I didn't know I would become, you know, this sort of like Casey Kasem / Dick Clark of hip hop or whatever. But it was really the timing of my life, being in the right place at the right time and getting a chance to really be the ambassador. And I knew I wanted cats that looked like me to win. Like, I was just like, yo, man, this is dope as hell that TLC's the number one female group, and they got showcased on MTV, and boom, I don't know how many weeks Waterfalls was number one, bro. It was crazy. Like, you got to understand, TLC has never happened again. Like, that type of group, you know, Arrested Development, you know, Diggable Planets, stuff like when you say you was at George Washington, you could see them right at the quad, like look at them, and next thing you know, they on TV. That was crazy.
Yep. Yeah, that was nuts. That was amazing, the impact. So you do all that. You're having the impact in comedy. You're doing the Def Comedy Jam, multiple shows, MTV. How do you, Booty Call, how do you transition that? Because then you kind of did the comedy, you did the hosting, you started taking on some of the, I mean, always funny and entertaining, but some of the more serious and impactful roles. You're in a Madam C.J. Walker movie. How do you kind of transition to those types of things?
Well, it's a process, you know, because sometimes people don't know you can do other things, and you have to get the chance or the opportunity to do that and then be ready for the opportunity, right? So I always wanted to be an actor because I was interviewing actors every day, and I was like, damn, I want somebody to interview me. Yeah. Like, these guys are dropping movies every week, you know? I'm interviewing Will Smith for Independence Day, Salma Hayek, Halle Berry, Keanu Reeves and Tom Cruise. I'm interviewing these cats. They pushing these big studio movies. I was like, dog, I got to get in one of these damn movies. You know what I'm saying? And just the ambition of it all. And I didn't know, you know, how to do it. I didn't have a plan. I just knew I wanted to. So just once I painted that picture in my head, I guess just my ambition, foolish ambition, drove me to get to that destination, you know?
One of the things I always say to people, and I appreciate talking to you and others like you who are having that level of success, and I wonder if you were doing that back when you first started interviewing people. I love the fact that you can share that the people that you're watching on TV or the music or what have you are actually just real people. They got real challenges. They got real issues. They're real people. And we don't see a lot of that. And I think that was part of that whole accessibility thing that I was talking about then. You know, you saw them as real people. Did you kind of embrace that and understand that? Like, these people were stars, and I'm sitting here chilling with them.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that they liked to play video games and to go to amusement parks and, you know, kick it with their friends on the weekends when they weren't doing a tour. So when I got a chance to, you know, interview these artists, man, I just tried to bring out the humanity, their real personalities that they didn't get to do in a magazine cover or in an interview. Back in the day, they had, you know, Vibe magazine. They had all those, like, teen magazines that you would want to be in, like Tiger Beat back in the day and The Source. You know, you forget. Remember Tiger Beat back in the day? You would see all the artists. You'd see Justin Timberlake, Backstreet Boys, and all that kind of stuff. You'd see Jessica Simpson and Britney Spears. All those guys were in there back in the day.
Yeah.
They were all coming up.
So we're talking about, again, that significance. Throughout that process, you kind of transition. You're doing comedy. You're doing the acting. But I read someplace that you were always very aware of the roles that you were presenting. You said there weren't a lot of people who looked like you on MTV. So when the doors opened for you, you seemed to take very seriously what you're presenting, particularly as Black men in these different fields.
Yes, I definitely. Hold on a second. Mm-hmm. Get back. There you go.
Okay. So you take take that responsibility very seriously.
Yeah, I think it's important, the images that we put on screen. I think it's important in what we do and what we say. And so I've always, you know, just been that kind of cat that wanted to represent from not only cats that look like me, but people that came from my kind of background, you know, where I had a tough upbringing. You know, we weren't, you know, it was blue collar family, you know, work hard kind of family, like stay in a company for 30 years and get a pension. You know, my parents was those type of mom and dad. And so I was just like, I want to break out of this and just like break the mold and do something that's never been done before. And so once I got that opportunity, I knew I had to represent everything. Everything had to represent to me. Like, everything had to be indicative of that it's possible. Everything had to be indicative that, you know, brothers like us can be smart, funny, ambitious, and actually execute. You know what I mean? We can do everything if we put our mind to it. So I just really kept that as the heartbeat of my career. So when I look at roles and things that I want to play, I'm very selective. That's why you don't see me in a lot of stuff, because it's a lot of stuff that's garbage, you know. Yeah. I just don't want to do anything to be doing it, you know.
So you don't want to and don't have to work just for the sake of working at this point.
Exactly.
In your career. But you didn't really ever. I mean, you did fun stuff, but you didn't really ever kind of take the, all right, put me on camera, coach.
Yeah, no. I don't want to do it like that. It feels weird when it's like that. It feels, it doesn't feel authentic. You know what I'm saying? No disrespect to anybody that got to get their hustle. I'm just saying, I just don't want to hustle like that.
All right. So we've talked about kind of some of the background, how we got here, but what here is, at least now, coming to Philadelphia at the Lea Chorus Center, doing the We Outside comedy tour with a whole bunch of people. So tell me what's going on.
Yo, it's a lot of fun, man. This tour is really, really a combination of vets from different places and some of the new people, right? So you got me, you got Kid Capri with the music. So, you know, we kind of like that old school hip hop kind of situation. And then you got Tony Rock, he's coming through. You got, who else we got? Michael Blackson. Kelly Kales, up and coming, you know, and we have two other comics on there too. So it's like it's almost like a, like the Avengers, you know, everybody's got a little superhero powers, you know what I'm saying?
Okay. I mean, it's a stupid question, but I'm gonna ask it anyway, because, you know, that's what we do. Is comedy still fun. It feels like that we've had couple comedians on. People take things really seriously these days. You know, somebody's throwing bottles at people on stage because of things that they said. People want to fight.
That's because every now and then it's just people just get in their feelings. But at the same time, what would we do without comedy? Comedy is the relief for the culture. It's a relief for people that want to come out, have a few cocktails, and just go, oh, my God, yes. Woo! Because when you laugh really, really hard, you feel good. It releases crazy endorphins. It just makes you feel good. It releases tension from you. You walk out smiling, feeling better than you did walking in. So comedy ain't going nowhere. We're here to do what we've been gifted to do. Philly has been known traditionally for comedy my whole career. I've never had a show in Philly that wasn't to the wall. Because Philly, y'all just like that. I mean, Philly, if they love you, they love you to the end. If they hate you, they hate you. That's it. They don't have no in-between.
We're real like that. Amanda Seals was just on the
show. I seen the way y'all was booing Ben Simmons. They had t-shirts, Mr. Softy. I was like, dang, they went and got t-shirts.
Listen, I try to be the nice, respectful guy. Ben Simmons earned what Philadelphia is giving him.
Okay.
He learned all that. I'm not going to talk about challenges people have, the personal stuff or whatever. But in terms of, I mean, this dude out there puffing his chest out when he hits a free throw. Like, you want to shush the crowd after you hit a free throw and then you miss the next three?
See that Philly coming out of you right now.
So we mean it. Does that make for a fun crowd, though? Because you know you're getting it all.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I love Philly, man. When they laugh hard. When they love hard. Everything is from the heart, you know? And that's just the heartbeat of that city. And it's always been like that. You know where you stand. And what's wrong with that? I think that's a beautiful thing. So I already know I gotta come with it. You know what I'm saying? Last time I came to Philly, it was to the wall. So I got some funny stuff that's going to have people screaming and tweeting and stuff. I got you.
Couple things. Years ago, when I read an interview you did, that you said there were a couple things you wouldn't talk about. One of them was you don't want to do politics. Since then, the world kind of changed. And there was a lot of some
the only,
would say
only politics I want to talk about is Herschel Walker. That's it. Every time I see Herschel Walker, I go, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. I don't understand how he could say, I got to get ready for this erection. Oh, and nobody said that. Nobody. You ever just say, oh, my God, like, oh, my God. And you go, oh, my God. No, he not about to. Oh, my God. He made me say, oh, my God, like 82 times every time they interview him.
It got so bad. See, now you're about to get me in trouble. And
you know, you got to tiptoe. Just listen, let me talk.
I can be canceled. Like, you on tour. You're doing your own thing. I can still be canceled. But it got so bad that you were sitting back going, like, I don't even know if I'm supposed to laugh at this. Because he's serious.
I know, because I swear to you, when you watch Herschel Walker, don't it seem like you're watching an SNL skit? I was like, nah, that's an actor. No, that's really Herschel. Oh, my God.
This is when I expect scrolling across the screen. The opinions expressed by the guests and hosts on this program are not necessarily in line with the ownership and management. When I was in radio, we used to rock that disclaimer. That
just
was
so
the
you can get
cancel
through.
Bill. Don't sue me.
Right. Just cancel. Don't mess with you, Bill.
That's the kind of thing we roll out. A few more and then we will let you go. I appreciate you doing all this. Tell us about the book. Because we started touching on it just a little bit, but Top Billing coming out soon. Just quickly,
yeah, you can
have a lot of people
you
about
can, you can do a pre-order too right now. Obviously, the hard copy and the audio book will be out in April of 2023. It's called Top Billing. Same name as my podcast, and it's basically stories of laughter, love, and triumph on my career, my life, things that, you know, I went through, things that I had to overcome, things that was just like, oh my God, moments that I never told anybody. So I got an opportunity to do this in the narration, which is really cool. And then when you hear me do it on the audiobook, I think it's just going to transform you into the 90s, you know? So basically my book is very, very like a soundtrack. each chapter will have a song that is indicative of that moment in my life. So I really feel like this book is going to be a big one.
You transitioned, and it's out in April, so people can pre-order now. And I was online, and I see, like, it's out everywhere. People are pre-ordering right now. The buzz is starting. Like, people are kind of talking about the book. We've had a couple people on who are writing books, and most of them said they started with this idea, I'm going to write a book. And then you start doing it, and you reach a point where you're like, do I really want to share this much about what was going on in my life? Right. At that? Like, did you have any of those moments, or is this just mostly fun?
No, I do. I do have moments that I had to, you know, take a deep breath and sort of just express, you know, what I really felt and what I was going through, right? Because everybody goes through something, and I hope that at the end of the day, people will be inspired by my book and realize that, you know, life will throw you curveballs. It's just what you do with that after you go through something tough. You know, do you give up? Do you get back on your feet? Do you walk before you can run? There's a lot of different ways to overcome tough situations, but they're also learning. You learn a lot about yourself in a tough situation. You learn about what you're capable of, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I don't say that, okay, I would love every day to be Saturday, but, you know, sometimes it's rainy Wednesdays. You know, that's just life. You feel me?
Yeah. Two more things. Advice. So as I was looking at the evolution of your career from the baggy jeans and the X hats and the one strap, you know, all the stuff we were talking about before, as your career has continued to progress, you've talked about, you know, men needing to be accepting of sensitivity. You've talked about diversity in Hollywood or the lack thereof. Is there a conscious effort to kind of transition into this grown man stuff that you focus on now?
Well, it's just an evolution, man. It's just like, you can't know about what you don't talk. You can't talk about what you don't know about. Right. Mm-hmm. And so as you evolve and you expose yourself to different arenas, you learn more. And then that just adds more information to your portfolio. So I just think that this part of Bill Bellamy, I'm definitely a grown man. I'm definitely wiser. I'm definitely, you know, a father, husband. I got kids in college, you know, and stuff like that. So I got an arsenal of things that I'm concerned about. Like, I'm concerned about education, the arts, you know, I'm concerned about preserving pop culture and hip hop and keeping it authentic and organic. Like, I'm passionate about stuff like that. I'm passionate about education. So you're gonna see me hit you from different angles. Be like, yo, Bill's over here doing this with the kids, or Bill's doing this with helping these new artists that people don't know about that are incredible artists and they do this amazing artwork that they're young and they're creating art. Like, that stuff is important as well.
We said, last two questions, both Jazzy Jeff and Tretch have both been on the show in the last, I don't know, several weeks. And both of them said it's the first generation where we've seen this culture actually grow up. Like, hip hop culture is now, you know, 30, 40, 50 years old. And we've never seen that culture grow up before. Now, do you feel any of that? Like, we're defining what the MTV generation, the hip hop generation, the Def Comedy Jam generation, how that generation is going to age and the impact we're going to have.
Yeah, I think we have so many things to consider. Like, we have social media that didn't exist 25 years ago, different platforms in which you can put music and culture and interviews, all these kind of different things that people get to know artists that didn't exist before. So we have to have a conscious or a collective movement that we want it to stay what it is. You know, we want it to grow as well, but also, like, keep the fun of hip hop, make people want to be artists, you know, make people want to express their music and their arts. You know what I mean? It's so much to hip hop and the growth that it's actually remarkable, considering that it was not considered to be popular in the early 80s. It was kind of like the underground. I don't know, it's dirty. Yeah. This now it's everywhere. Hip hop is in every part of life. It's like, it's the jingles and the commercials. It's the, it's, uh, it's the fashion, you know, what people are wearing, you know, it's all derivatives of this culture.
We end every episode of The Pulse with the concept of use your voice for good. Two things I want to ask you. One, I want to ask you what that means to you, but I also have been reading this this comedy collective, and one of the trailblazers, Sinbad, has not been doing very well, and you've kind of spoken out about the need for people to be supportive of him and kind of don't forget him.
Yeah, man, it's just like, I think this is a perfect example. Sinbad is a perfect example who is a big brother to me in respect to, he was one of the first guys to ever put me on TV, right? And so to me, I said, with all these popular, very successful comedians, we should protect him. Like, we should make sure he is okay and his family is good. Like, let's not let him just be like some comedian that was, you know, we liked and stuff. Like, yo, he's in a fraternity. He has definitely put in his time, and he is a OG in the game, and he has, like, what you say, seniority. Yeah. And I think we just had a conference call about it yesterday. It was just like, what we're going to do? We're going to do something, bro. There's no way that we can sit back and watch, you know, one of our fellow comedians that pioneered and was a trailblazer for us just not get help. I don't care if it's bringing food to the house, if it's, you know, financial or just constantly keeping his name buzzing so we don't forget about him. All of these things can help. Prayer is powerful, right? And a lot of times when people get sick, you forget, people forget about you because they don't see you. And now you get depressed and you feel like your value and your imprint isn't there. And I don't want that to happen to Sinbad. He's a great guy.
I feel like that's a good place to leave. Use your voice for good. It absolutely fits. Yeah. Bill Bellamy, we appreciate you taking time with us. We appreciate what you've done. We're going to sell out the Leocoris Center so everybody can come get a taste of the We Outside tour, and we'll get that book on the bestseller list. We appreciate you.
Holla. Man. Love you, man. Way to go, Bill. Way to keep it clean, Billy.
Yeah. Now we're going to end this interview, and I'm going to, over the loudspeaker, Bill, we didn't need to talk to you about that Herschel Walker segment.
I know. All right, man.
Have a good one, man. I appreciate you.
Peace.
All right, take care. All right, so that was fun, right? The stories of Bill Bellamy. Don't act like I'm the only one who was wearing the X hat and the cross colors and those big multicolored leather jackets. You remember all that kind of stuff. And Bill Bellamy took us back just a little bit. He's got great stories. It was cool kind of hearing the evolution of his career. Somebody we've watched for a while until we get here today. He is touring, so we mentioned the shows in Philly, but you can search it. I'm sure he is coming to an area near you, regardless of where you are. Guys, I want to remind you, as I always do, if you're ever in Philadelphia and you want to watch the show, we air Monday evenings at 6:30. We would love to have you. We also air nationally on Fox Soul, also on Monday evenings. And every episode is on YouTube. And I will tell you, it is worth doing a search. Some of the shows that you may have missed are there, and you can check them out. Subscribe to the podcast, get that notification. Hit me up on social media at BillAFox29. We are always happy to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you again same time next week. And until then, I leave you as I always do. Whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.